It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's up, everybody? It is Thursday. You know what that means. The Week 4 NFL DFS episode of the Fade the Chalk podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. My name is Adam Pfeiffer, joined this week for Week 4 to break down the entire main slate on Sunday by my colleague at FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy. He does a ton of great stuff for us, content, projections, roster percentages, everything you need for every DFS sport, and obviously football right now. It's Kyle Murray. Kyle, it's funny, man. Like, I'm sure since you started here, there's been the Kyler Murray, Kyle Murray jokes, but about 30 seconds after you messaged me for us to get on this podcast, I got a notification from Fantasy about Kyler Murray, and it confused the hell out of me. So what's up, dude?
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot these days. It's especially during football season. It's like I can't miss those, you know, comparisons or the jokes about the name. I mean, it throws me off sometimes too. I'll read something and I'll, you know, have to double take, because obviously when I'm reading something about myself, it's nowhere near what Kyler Murray's out there doing right now. I wish I was in that same kind of realm of success that he's having. But yeah, it is funny how it's really hard to miss those kinds of comparisons right now with the name being one letter off.
Yeah. But you know, we're glad to have you, obviously. Before we get into the slate, talk about all the content and stuff you do, especially with projections and everything like that over at FTN Daily, because it's obviously great stuff. I have flag football every Sunday morning at like 9. So I get home and then just get right to my desk and answer questions in Discord and prepare for the games. But then I put on the Sunday morning DFS show with you, D-Bro, and Elliot. So you're doing that. So what else are you doing? Obviously for football, but then look, we got the early bird NBA deal right now. The first one launched and the first 100 sold out. Now we have another, I think, 100 or so for $225. So I know you're doing basketball as well. I mean, baseball is still going. Like, what do you got going on right now?
Yeah, doing the projections for all three of those sports that you just mentioned, as well as golf. So, I mean, we're going to have a point in time where we're going to have playoff baseball, regular season basketball, golf, and NFL all rolling in mid to late
this
October.
This is like 100% the best time of the year for sports.
Yeah, 100%. It is very busy when all sports are rolling together, but it's nothing that, you know, that we can complain about. It's sports, and we're happy to have them all, especially after, you know, we had that 4 or 5 month period with no sports at all, you know, about a year back. So definitely pumped for that. But doing the projections for all those four sports, doing content for all those four sports for NFL, like you mentioned, the Sunday show, but I also do a Friday show with Alex and Chris Meany, which is a great time at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And then, yeah, once NBA starts, we're going to have some shows, I think two shows a day. 7 days a week, I think we're going to have two shows rolling. At least 6 days a week, we'll have two shows rolling. So we're going to have tons of content. I'm sure I'll be on a ton of those for NBA. So pumped about NBA. But like you mentioned, we're, you know, still in the early stages of NFL. It's like, it's kind of crazy. It's like the NFL, it feels like, you know, we're kind of past a couple of the new early stages, but we're still only 3 weeks in, not on to Week 4. So it's definitely feels weird.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe I'll be on a handful of those NBA shows as well. Like, I love football, but I always say this, like, basketball has, you know, it's still close, but it's my favorite sport to talk about. They're both amazing. I love them both, but basketball does get the slight edge. So, yeah, I love NFL season, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't excited to do some basketball content. And again, the early bird deal, I believe it's, what, $224.99 is the second deal we're running, because the first 100 sold out when it was at 199. You get the optimizer, you get your projections, roster percentages, tools, access to the Discord. So you get all that great stuff. So make sure you're checking that out. Again, basketball season, I mean, media days was this week. It's closer than you think. So let's get to these games though for week number 4. Pretty interesting slate. We'll start with the Houston Texans traveling to Buffalo to take on the Bills. Buffalo, last time I looked, like 17.5 point home favorites here. And a lot of times when you see a team that high of a favorite at home, you say, okay, smash the running backs. But like, this isn't a typical team that when they're huge favorites, it's a situation where the running backs, yeah, I mean, Singletary and Moss could have good games here, but if the Bills, with their offense, the way it's constructed, I know they scored 35 against Miami with three rushing touchdowns 2 weeks ago, but I mean, after what they just did to Washington, still at home against the Texans defense, I mean, how do you not love Josh Allen double stacks here?
Yeah, it's hard to ignore it. I actually think we're going to have a spot where we might get a little bit of decrease in how popular they are because of that spread. Obviously, they're massive favorites against
I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, like, matchup, considering like how good the matchup is and how good some of these targets are, and obviously it's one of the best fantasy producing quarterbacks in football. I think all that aside, like, they probably would have been the most popular team on the board. And I think the fact that they aren't going to be, which I think right now in my projections, I have them as the third most popular team. I think that's, you know, they're still gonna be popular. So it's not like they're gonna be going under the radar. So I guess you should clarify that. But
can I guess who the two more popular passing offenses are? Rams?
No, I have Rams at four, actually.
Okay, then I'm going to be completely off because I don't. I thought the Rams would be number one. Like, I don't. Maybe it's the Chiefs. I mean, I feel like the Chiefs are always up there.
Chiefs are number one.
Okay, that was. Then I was going to say. I think. I was going to say the Rams were like my lock, so that just threw me off. So never mind.
Number two might be a bit of a surprise, but if you would have guessed this team early in the year, or especially even after week one, it wouldn't have been a surprise, if that gives you any kind of hint.
Oh, okay. We'll get to it when we get to the game, but I think I know where we're going now.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like, I love stacking Josh Allen in any which way in this game, right? You can play, obviously, him and, like, Stephon Diggs, he hasn't had the huge game yet. There's been back-to-back games where Buffalo's offense has scored 35-plus points, and Diggs has been at, like, 60 yards, and he had the touchdown against Miami, but the underlying numbers are still there, right? He's got like a 26% target share. He's actually tied for the team lead with Emmanuel Sanders with 7 deep targets. That's actually, I think, fourth in the entire NFL. And he's tied for the team lead in end zone targets with 3. So he's going to have, especially if the Bills put up as many points as we think, he's going to have a 8-catch, 140-yard touch and 1 touchdown game. And why can't it be this week? I love Cole Beasley here. Cole Beasley is legit one of my favorite plays of the slate. Obviously, more suited on DraftKings, but you look at the Texans defense. When we last saw them on Thursday night last week, they played a lot of cover 2, a lot of zone defense, and DJ Moore just got underneath the zone and dominated. If they play a lot of zone again, Cole Beasley is going to go off, because Cole Beasley currently leads the NFL in receptions with 19 and targets with 23 against zone coverage. He's obviously been a massive producer against zone his entire career. I love Beasley here. Then Emmanuel Sanders coming off a huge game, 4,900, clearly the number 3 receiver over Gabriel Davis. I mean, they're all like really good plays for me.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Tough to really argue that. I mean, I have, in terms of projections, I have Beasley, Sanders, and Stephon Diggs all projecting as plays that are definitely in play here. In terms of their point per dollar, Sanders and Cole Beasley make a ton of sense. But Diggs, I think, is going to be overlooked as well. I have him at, you know, under 8% right now in terms of popularity. And I think, I think that's too low right now. On FanDuel, he's a bit more popular right now. Pairing him up with Josh Allen is going to be very chalky over there. I think he'll be more popular on FanDuel. But one thing that I like the most about this Buffalo team is they don't really let off the gas at all, right? Like, over the past 2 years in game scripts where they're up 8 or more points, they're throwing at the third highest rate, 56%. Like, there are teams that we're rostering on a daily basis. Like, for example, Arizona, their season-long passing percentage in any game script is at about 56% right now. And they've gotten there numerous times already this year. Obviously not last week, but, I mean, if you rostered guys like Christian Kirk and AJ Green, you were fine. So, like, at a 56% pass rate, even in spots where they're up 8 or more points, in this kind of matchup, I think it's a fantastic spot. You mentioned, like, it's not really the normal team where they, you know, have two running backs that might run the ball. You know, we've seen Moss get in the end zone a couple times. Actually, we've seen both running backs have 2 touchdown games this year, which is probably something that you wouldn't have guessed prior to the season. But I think that's also kind of led to, you know, less production from guys like Diggs. Beasley's had a couple of good games. So I think it's a good spot to buy low, especially on someone like Diggs here in a great matchup in a spot where it seems like everybody up here in this top range, Devontae Adams, Cooper Kupp, even Tyreek Hill, they're just taking all the ownership away from Stephon Diggs, and I think that's a very interesting spot. We know the matchup's great. Like, the matchup, obviously, we can talk about it night and day, But in my opinion, the more interesting part is the game theory aspect of it, where it's just kind of being overlooked. And in my opinion, largely because of that spread, and that's why it's getting overlooked.
Yeah, I'm going to have a ton of different Buffalo stacks. I want to see on FanDuel, Zach Moss, where he's 6K, so it's not like, it's not awful. Like, I don't think he's a terrible play because he did look really good last week, and there's still a chance that the Bills, like, you know, there's a chance that the Bills get a couple of rushing touchdowns in this game. And, you know, early, all offseason, I was Singletary over Moss, but, like, for this play, for this game, if you are to play a running back from the Bills, I would go with Moss. But they're obviously, it's like a rare spot where a team is 17-point home favorites and you don't smash the running backs. Like, you can. I don't think that's a terrible idea, but I still favor the passing game here. Is it Brandon Cooks or bust for the Texans? I mean, Tre'Davious White doesn't really shadow. I don't see him shadowing much in this game. He didn't shadow Terry McLaurin last week, so why would he shadow Brandon Cooks in this game? Not that Brandon Cooks is Brandon Cooks is a tremendous player. It's just different offense. Like, maybe you say, okay, they don't have anybody else, let's just put Trey White on Brandon Cooks. But simply, I feel like if you're playing Brandon Cooks, they're obviously huge underdogs. He's got like a 38% target share. Makes sense. But other than that, like, there's nobody from this team, right?
Yeah. Brandon Cooks is probably just going to be in like run backs only for me.
Right.
But yeah, it's a very hard sell to get to anyone else.
All right, let's move on to Detroit at the Chicago Bears. And this game's kind of tough to break down right now because we don't really know who's playing quarterback for the Bears. I mean, Fields is a little bit banged up. Dalton's not going to play, or might not play. They're talking about maybe Nick Foles getting the start if things, you know, if the quarterbacks don't get healthy. We've seen with the Bears offense this season, you know, Robinson's been bad. Montgomery had week one and then's been bad. The Bears price tags have really plummeted. I mean, Dave Montgomery's at home against Detroit, 5,800. I do have interest in Montgomery because he played week one, left for a little bit with a minor injury, and then Damian Williams got some snaps and touches. But since then, it's been all like Montgomery's getting 100% of the running back touches. So at 5,800, I think he makes sense. Robinson's the same price. I feel more like confident in Montgomery just based off the volume. But how do we, again, it's, you know, it's still Thursday afternoon, but like, how do we approach the Bears right now?
It's very difficult. Obviously with all the quarterback mess going on, and then there's some reports that, you know, Nagy might give up his play calling duties. He didn't want to publicly confirm it, which makes sense. But if he's going to give up his play calling duties, the entire scheme could change, which in my opinion would be fantastic because the offense has looked absolutely atrocious in the first 3 weeks of the season. They have got negative amount of momentum going. It's been really bad. So I think that's probably the right move right now, but it is tough to analyze them. I will say a couple of guys like Montgomery and probably Robinson. Like, if you like those guys, and even Mooney, if you like those guys, you probably like them knowing that the quarterback play is either going to be sketchy at best or just downright not great. However, you know, they still have upside. Their prices are down. You know, the interest in these players are down as a whole. Like, Darnell Mooney's under 4K again, despite playing 95% of the snaps. Like, it's a guy that I think is going to get it going eventually, especially if he's playing that much and seeing that kind of work. But, you know, so I think the plays, if you're interested in those plays, you can kind of still have that interest despite the quarterback play. I guess that's the way I feel about it. You know, Mooney, 95% of the snaps, 23% of the targets this year. So, like, if I like Mooney, it's because I think there's upside because he's playing a ton of snaps. He's getting a lot of targets. And the quarterback's probably not going to be fantastic either way, right? So I think if you're going to break it down that way, Mooney, Robinson, Montgomery, if you like them, I don't think the quarterback should really matter. Montgomery, I think 5,800, that's probably too cheap. He's going to be the chalk of the week at running back, in my opinion. That's where I have him in the projections right now. He's the third highest running back on the board in terms of ownership. So I do think he's going to be popular. I think it's probably a spot where you can eat some of that chalk if you wanted to. However, Robinson and Mooney could be good pivots here, especially if you're willing to take that risk. I mean, Robinson's been really bad this year, but we've seen him be quarterback proof throughout his entire career. So it's never been an issue for us in the past. So the fact that the stock on Robinson is just plummeting right now in terms of the price from DraftKings and in terms of the interest from the public, you know, it might be a spot to buy low. And then obviously Mooney was not only a preseason darling, but your preseason darling. So obviously this podcast is a fan of Darnell Mooney. So I think it could be a spot to buy low on him as well.
I was taking notes and I did like a double take when I saw his price. Like I didn't expect it to be 5K, 5, you know, 6K, obviously, but under 4K was pretty.
Yeah.
He is playing, like you said, like every snap. And the reason I was so excited about Mooney is because I was so high on Justin Fields, and I still think Justin Fields is going to be good. But he, like, the allure is that Mooney is a guy who didn't have a single catchable deep target last year. Justin Fields, during his time in college, was an incredibly accurate passer, especially on the deep ball. I mean, last week he had no shot. He was under pressure just over 53% of the time. They didn't use him. You know, the offensive play calling was terrible. Detroit has the third fewest pressures in the NFL through 3 weeks. So if Fields does start again, I think he's like, because the value at quarterback on this slate is not great. Like I had to write the DFS value article, and I don't want to give the whole article away, but Matt Ryan was one of the quarterbacks I put, yeah. And I literally like wrote it in the article. Like I don't have a ton of confidence in this, but the quarterbacks in terms of value on the slate aren't great, and Fields, they didn't use him in the, like, you know, out of the pocket or anything. It was just so weird. But yeah, I mean, if there was a spot for Mooney to get going, I could see it being this one. We'll get to this game, but real quick, one word answer. Like there, you talked about some running backs potentially being popular. Would you rather play Montgomery or Chuba Hubbard?
I would have to I know you said a one word answer.
Yeah, I didn't mean like just.
it would depend on popularity for me.
Right.
But initially it would be Montgomery.
I agree. So, for Detroit, DeAndre Swift is too cheap. Like, and I had my concerns about Swift entering the season. Bad offense, Jamal Williams being there, Anthony Lynn using multiple running backs. But at the end of the day, the touches he's getting are so valuable, right? He is currently fifth among all running backs in routes run, second in targets. He's averaging 2.13 yards per route run. That's ninth best among running backs. There was a report that came out about them giving him even more work going forward. 6,200, DeAndre Swift, matchup aside, like if he's getting 12 to 15 carries, goal line work, and eight targets a game, he's too cheap at 6,200.
Yeah, I do agree. I think this could be a spot though where we might see that popularity really balloon after the comments from Campbell about wanting to get
Swift.
And
he was too cheap last week too.
Yeah.
He's like 5'8 last week or something.
Yeah, and like so then it comes down to the point where, okay, this guy could potentially, you know, get up to what, 20% in some contests if it really does inflate like I think it potentially could. So then when it comes down to that, you're then comparing him to a few other guys in this price range, you know, that either don't have people that are potentially bugging them, like Jamal Williams is. Like I know that they want to get him work, they're gonna say they're gonna get him work, and they should because he
right.
You know, he was there.
But like Jamal Williams is still going to play more than, say, Damian Williams in Chicago, or
yeah,
he might even he'll play more than Royce Freeman, too. So it's like.
Exactly. And even when we saw Swift get a lot of work last week, we still saw Jamal Williams come in and get that 1 yard touchdown run. Right. So like, and then when it comes to that, even if you want to compare him to someone like, let's say, Antonio Gibson, who we know McKissick could potentially, you know, aggravate Gibson touches and stuff like that. But then you're considering the fact that Swift could be, what, double the popularity of Gibson. So then you're kind of comparing two guys with maybe equal amounts of workload, Gibson with a better matchup. So then that's just the case that against Swift, I guess. I do like him. I do think he's going to see more work because I think that's what they should do. But also it could be a spot where that coach speak really balloons the ownership here, and that could be a good spot to pivot. And it's not like we're without pivots here. There's plenty of pivots in this range,
yeah.
Antonio Gibson being my favorite one.
Hockenson had a dud last week. If you want to go back to him, like I'm fine with it. You know, the targets are going to be there for the most part. He's $100 less than Kittle. He's $500 more on DraftKings than Mark Andrews. Like he's fine. And then we've seen secondary receivers, you know, whoever's pretty much running routes, not against Jalen Johnson, have some success against the Bears, but I don't want to play Quintez Cephas or Khalif Raymond on this slate. So anything else from Detroit?
No, I mean, if you are playing Hockenson, it's probably like with some kind of correlation, in my opinion, just because Or it's with the thing, like the thought that TJ Hockenson is as good as George Kittle, which I don't know if I can quite get there yet. And I'm from Michigan, so like it's probably easier for me to get there than other people. But still, like when George Kittle is $100 more, I'm probably going to do that 9 times out of 10, especially considering, you know, Kittle isn't going to be that popular because we have Travis Kelce on the slate. Now he'll be much more popular than Hockenson, but that's my thought on Hockenson. So I probably leave him in spots where I'm either trying to diversify because I already have a ton of Kittle, or I'm correlating them with some Chicago player.
All right, let's go to the Titans at the Jets. Injury news. I mean, A.J. Brown, week to week with a hamstring. Julio Jones didn't practice on Wednesday with a hamstring. I would be shocked if A.J. Brown plays, and it sounds like Julio is very, very questionable. So you have the Jets, who are going to be still home underdogs in this game, regardless of the receivers for Tennessee. Derrick Henry, this is ridiculous. I mean, in the past, we've talked about Derrick Henry on a site like DraftKings. Like, yeah, he's a great play, but can you play him when he's priced with, I know, again, McCaffrey's out this week, but just in general, like when he's priced around guys like McCaffrey and Kamara and Dalvin Cook and Saquon Barkley when Barkley was at his, you know, at his best, like that was an argument. But now Derrick Henry's averaging a career high 4.3 targets per game. Last year, he had 7 total targets off screens. You know, everybody pretty much says, like, why don't they just give him 3-4 screens a game and let him run downhill? Nobody's going to tackle him. 7 screens all last year. He already has 4 this year. He's on pace to shatter his career high in targets. So if he's getting, he has 41 and 31 touches the last 2 weeks. He's getting 25 carries a game. That's just set in stone, lock it up. But now if he's getting 3 to 5 catches a game, it's over. And now he's facing a Jets team that's allowed multiple running back touchdowns in both in each of their last 2 games.
Yeah, I mean, his pass game work isn't going to be equivalent to one of Alvin Kamara even this year when we do see his targets boost up to, what, 13% so far on the year. Like you mentioned, 13 total on the season. But still, like, obviously he's going to get the run game, and his offense has been, you know, much more efficient than what we've seen out of New Orleans. So now you're kind of comparing Derrick Henry's, you know, slight decrease in passing work compared to Kamara, which, you know, it's a 10% drop off, but the much better running game and the much higher rushing share. So, yeah, I agree. I think Henry is, like, by far the better play than Kamara this week. And right now I have Kamara as the more popular option. I have Derrick Henry as the better projected option. He's higher in my player rater that, you know, we have in the optimizer and all that stuff over on FTN Daily. And I think they're both good plays, but I would definitely prefer Henry. I will be interested to see how the public treats Henry if we do, you know, finally get news of A.J. Brown being rolled out, who I do think he won't play. If they're calling him week to week, it's probably unlikely that he plays. But if Julio Jones is also ruled out, if the public just, you know, floods to Derrick Henry, I think that could be an interesting thing to monitor. But yeah, as of now, I think Henry's clearly the top running back that I want to pay up for this week.
Do we go to any potential value at receiver if both Julio Jones and A.J. Brown are out?
I think the one guy that stands out to me is, I guess, Chester Rogers or Westbrook Akinye. I don't know. They don't say how it's spelled. So I don't know that once it's.
I think it's point, Westbrook just, Akina. But
okay, that sounds right. Yeah.
But yeah, so like
one of those two. They both scored last week, right?
Yeah, and Westbrook was the one who dominated the snap. Not dominated, but he played the most snaps, ran the most routes. So he was kind of operating because Julio Jones didn't play the whole fourth quarter because they were limiting him, and they said it was just, you know, kind of like load management, but it comes out he's actually hurt. So
yeah.
And their two wide receiver sets, it'll be Rodgers and Westbrook. I mean, they're both 32 and 3,300. I mean, they'll open up some value for sure.
Yeah, even if just A.J. Brown is out, I think Rodgers is pretty interesting. It might be tough to assume the role of Westbrook if we don't know, like if Julio does play, because, you know, like you mentioned, a lot of the role that we saw last week was with Julio sidelined because they just didn't want to run him out there. He did play 78% of the snaps last week while Rodgers only played 41. So maybe that's kind of an indication that it will be Westbrook. But Rodgers has been more of their slot guy this year, so it seems like it kind of didn't really fit his like role to slot in there for A.J. Brown. But yeah, that's actually a tough question. Like if just Julio plays, which one would I prefer? Because if they're both out, I think they're both interesting value options. But if just Julio is in and A.J. Brown is out, who would you prefer? Obviously, we would like Julio.
Rodgers, Rodgers had been playing the most after Julio and AJ Brown. Like when Julio and AJ Brown had been on the field, Rodgers had been the number three in the slot. Yeah. So, but at the same time, would they just say, okay, Rodgers, we want you in the slot. So that means in three receiver sets, Rodgers is in. But if they go too wide, which the Titans are going to go too wide a lot, especially with AJ Brown out, it would probably be Westbrook. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. We'll see what the practice reports come out today. Again, I'm with you. I'd be pretty surprised at this point if AJ Brown played. We'll see with Julio. Anybody on the Jets? I mean, Corey Davis, revenge game. He's still getting plenty of targets despite this Jets offense being terrible. The Titans secondary has been awful. They're giving up a ton of points to receivers. Elijah Moore is dealing with a concussion. I think Jamison Crowder is expected to be back in this game. He's been limited in practice so far. I'm not playing anybody in the Jets backfield. I'm not playing. It's probably just Corey Davis or bust, but this game's not overly exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to, I mean, I never like to speculate about injuries or anything like that, but it does seem like, you know, Crowder was out week one because of COVID-related stuff. And initially, like, you know, with the Antonio Brown situation, we see him come right back. That tells me that maybe Crowder isn't, you know, getting back to normal as quickly as possible since he had to miss week two and week three. So if he's going to be limited at all, I think Corey Davis is a very strong play at 5K. We know that he's going to dominate a good amount of the targets. And, you know, he's dealt with some pretty tough matchups over the last couple of weeks. And based on what we've seen from Tennessee in these first 3 weeks, they are not necessarily a tough matchup, right? So I think it could be a spot where Corey Davis is definitely on my radar. So far this year, 31st in pass DVOA, the Titans are. So Corey Davis definitely on my radar, whether or not Crowder plays. Because if he does play, I'm not really anticipating him being a full go. And even if he does, I still think Corey Davis is the number one. I mean, it's tough to make a case for Carter in DFS. But he's a guy that I'm keeping my eye on. Not a guy that I'm necessarily playing, but I do think he's going to be a guy that takes over as the RB1 eventually. Mm-hmm. So probably not this week. I mean, if you're building 150 lineups and you're like, okay, I'm on lineup 145 and I need a punt running back to fit in the Chiefs or whatever, and he's your guy, you could probably do worse in this range, but not a guy I'm like actively recommending.
Yeah. I mean, Tevin Coleman was a healthy scratch last week after the week before his snaps went down. So they're clearly looking to give Michael Carter more and more each week. All right. This next game, Kansas City at Philadelphia. The Eagles offensive line really banged up again. They could be without, well, they're already going to be without Brandon Brooks and Isaac Somalu, but Jordan Vailata might not play. Like, again, it's just every year this Eagles offensive line is missing key players. But there's obviously some potential for a high scoring game here. The Chiefs defense has been terrible so far this season. They actually are giving up the most points per drive in the NFL so far this year at just over 3.2 per drive, and the most yards per drive at 43. So for me, the question comes down to, are the Eagles going to run the damn ball? Because it's a good spot for them, right? 13.3 of the runs against the Chiefs this year have gone for 10 plus yards, third highest rate in the NFL. I mean, if Miles Sanders gets the ball here, he should be productive. He's fairly priced. It's just, are they going to run the football? And could they get behind again like they did against Dallas, where they don't run the football? Because Kenny Gainwell has been playing a ton of two-minute and passing down snaps for this team. So let's start with the Eagles. What do you make of them here against the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think the Eagles are a pretty interesting stack. I do like the idea of Jalen Hurts just because, like, last week they had no hesitation to just eliminate the run game, which not great if you're trying to roster or play Miles Sanders anywhere. But, you know, we saw Miles Sanders have that big chunk play, I think, in like the first or second quarter, and they did not even consider giving him the ball. They're driving back early and often with Jalen Hurts, and that's kind of what you like to see if you're looking to roster a quarterback, right? And Hurts played terribly on Monday night, and he still produced, I think it was like 24 DraftKings points. So even in like a very brutal game, he can still get there because he has so much upside on the ground. He was going to pick up a few points here and there with his feet. And then if they're going to continue to let him drop back and throw 30 plus times, he has a ton of upside. So I do like Jalen Hurts a pretty good amount. Obviously, Mahomes is a great play every single week. And he's going to be popular this week. I do think Kansas City will be one of the more popular stacks of the week, but I have no issue with it. The only issue I typically have with Kansas City is the price and if you can make that work. But again, it's the highest implied game total on the board, or tied for the highest, and the Chiefs have the second highest implied team total. So I do think Philly could be a little bit of a contrarian team because everyone's going to probably flock to the Kansas City side. But I really like Philly. I like Jalen Hurts a lot, and I actually don't mind pairing him up with two pass catchers, which might be a little bit unique because obviously Jalen Hurts, if he's going to really have a massive ceiling game, it's probably because he's going to do a little bit on the ground as well. But kind of what we've seen with how much they're throwing this year and how, I shouldn't say concentrated, but how you clearly know who like the top two pass catchers are between Rieger and Devonta Smith. Like Rieger, 21% of the targets, Devonta Smith, 23%. Like those are the two guys I definitely want to pair. You can mess around with Goddard and Ertz, I guess Ertz, if you wanted to like get some maybe some correlation at like a cheaper tight end position. But Rieger and Smith make a lot of sense. I've been pretty impressed with the way their offense is running. And they've been playing fast, fastest paced team so far this season. So it's a team that I think is going to be in a good spot to put up some fantasy points.
I think Sanders is very interesting in tournaments because if he gets 15 to 18 touches in this game and if the Eagles can keep it close enough, I think he could have a really productive game. So I think I might sprinkle in Sanders in tournaments. For the Chiefs, yeah, I mean, Mahomes is great. Kelsey's, I said it like, not that I'm breaking news, but like we talk about McCaffrey being a cheat code in fantasy and Kyler, like Kelsey's a cheat code. Like he,
yeah,
even when he doesn't score, he's getting 100 yards. And the Eagles just gave up a massive game to Dalton Schultz. So I think they'll be having some issues with Kelsey. What do we do? I mean, Tyreek Hill. I mean, it's not like we, if you're playing Mahomes lineups, you're probably playing Tyreek Hill, obviously. I've seen like teams are, they're saying like teams have been doubling him, which is why he hasn't been producing. I mean, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, they're going to get ways to get Tyreek Hill the football. Maybe that's why Josh Gordon's there, right? Maybe it's obviously Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson haven't been exactly what they hoped to break out as the number two or number three pass catchers on this team. But maybe Josh Gordon's there to kind of maybe take some attention away from Tyreek Hill. I don't know. But, like, we know Tyreek Hill, it's coming, right? The 10-catch, 160, and 2-touchdown game. Like, it's coming.
Yeah, I mean, this happens every year with Tyreek Hill, right? He has a game or two where he disappears. And then there he goes, 200 yards and 2 touchdowns by halftime like he did last year. I think it was against Denver or something like that. Like
it was against Tampa. It was ridiculous.
Tampa, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
like, it was fun too because I was facing him in a league and I was able to relax by halftime because there was no point of checking scores anymore. It was over.
Yeah, and it's going to happen, right? I mean, I will say like he still has 26 targets on the year, same amount as Travis Kelce. So I it's not like he's just not getting looks. He just hasn't really turned them into anything. So I think don't panic on Hill. If anything, it's a spot where the popularity is coming in much lower than guys like Adams and Cooper Kupp in this range. And if anything, that should be appealing to us because why would Mahomes be the second most popular quarterback and then Hill, you know, be a seemingly contrarian option in this range, right? Like that doesn't really make sense. So I do think it could be a spot to go right back to Tyreek Hill here.
Before we get out of this game, any Clyde? We fumbled again last week, but they went back to him. Got, I think, 19 touches? Yeah. And we just saw the Eagles on Monday night. They played a lot of too high safeties against Dallas, and Dak Prescott just kept checking at the line of scrimmage, and Zeke and Pollard did whatever they wanted. I mean, all teams do is run too high safeties against Kansas City. The Eagles' D-line keeps losing players to injury. Any interest in Clyde at 5,400? Again, the reason I was on him last week is because his price absolutely plummeted. I think it was 4,800 and it was the Chargers. But like, in the past, this has been one of the five worst matchups for running backs, but it's not as bad so far this year.
Yeah. I think Clyde's fine. I will say like maybe it's a spot where the matchup's better for the run, Philly being 22nd against the rush in terms of DVOA this year, while they're 13th against the pass. But I still much prefer the passing game. But again, Clyde is too cheap. So if maybe you're building lineups and you don't have the passing attack for Kansas City, getting exposure to a cheap running back in a spot on the team with the second highest implied game total or team total makes a lot of sense, right? However, if I'm, you know, building one lineup and I know I want Kansas City, I would favor the passing game. But if you're building several lineups and in those lineups you don't have the Chiefs passing attack, Clyde makes a ton of sense.
All right, let's go to another really fun game. Carolina at Dallas. 3-0 Panthers against the 2-1 Cowboys. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is not going to play in this game, so we should see a ton of Chuba Hubbard. 5,900 on DraftKings. He had 14 touches in McCaffrey's absence last Thursday night. Interesting here for Chuba. I wonder how popular he's going to be. I don't think he's a bad play, obviously. Dallas has been good against the run so far, but a lot of that skewed because the Eagles didn't even try to run last week. And I think if they did, they would have found success. Dallas's D-line is still missing some of their best players, including DeMarcus Lawrence. But even if they are good against the run, the Cowboys are struggling to stop receiver or running backs out of the backfield. I mean, they're allowing the third most targets per game to running backs and the third most receptions at just over 8 per game. So, and then Chuba ran 19 pass routes on 40 snaps in week 3. So if Chuba gets bottled up at the line of scrimmage, he can still get there off passing volume, especially with McCaffrey out, obviously. And Carolina is the only team in the league that hasn't played a single snap trailing. I think that happens this week against Dallas's offense. So that's the case. I mean, Chuba doesn't have to get 20 carries to be worth it at 5,900.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a good role for him last week, even after, it was fairly limited. McCaffrey only played 30% of the snaps last week, and then Hubbard ended up playing 55%. He 11 carries, 5 targets, like you mentioned. So I think it's a good spot to have interest in him, especially considering I don't think he's going to be overly popular with guys that we've already talked about in this range, DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery. Like, those guys will get some popularity. So I don't think we'll see a ton of interest go towards Hubbard. So I think that makes sense. And also, like, if you consider stacking Dallas, which is the second most popular team now in my model, which for me, I was surprised when I saw that. But then I thought, I was like, okay, but if I wouldn't have been surprised about this had it been week 2 or had it been week 1, right? So
Price tags are so,
looking at the prices, yeah.
And like, I believe Elliot and Deber were talking about this on Twitter that I was looking at. Like, Carolina has been stuffing the run, so like, we've seen Dallas now, it's clearly, and Kellen Moore is a great coordinator, so like, yeah. They didn't even try to run against Tampa Bay, and they almost won that game. Their offense did whatever they wanted to. Chargers, Eagles couldn't stop the run. Zeke and Pollard went crazy. So if this is a spot where they can't run the ball up the middle with Zeke and Pollard, you're going to maybe see 40. We're going to maybe see Dak return to 40 plus pass attempts. And if that's the case, with still no Michael Gallup, I mean, CeeDee at 6'7", J.C. Horn's not there. Yes, I brought in C.J. Henderson. C.J. Henderson is not better than J.C. Horn. And then Amari Cooper at 6K. I know he's been bad in back-to-back weeks, a little bit banged up, but I mean, that's 6K for Amari Cooper is very, very enticing.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a bit ridiculous.
I was going to say, it's probably borderline egregious.
it's almost as bad as like the Clyde price last week. I get why people thought that price made sense, because he had been so bad, and like, it's Clyde, right? But still, he's the RB1 and one of the better offenses in football. It's Amari Cooper that we're talking about. This guy just went for 40 plus points in week 1, and now he's down to 6K price with Chase Claypool and Cortland Sutton and these kinds of names. So like, I mean, there are a couple of other prices that I think are too cheap as well. But now the thing I like most about this game and Hubbard is you can stack this Dallas team, right? You can, pair Dak with CeeDee Lamb, who's not really too popular. I've been about 11.5%, and Amari Cooper, who I do think will be very popular, 17-18% right now. But then you can pair him with Hubbard, or pair them with Hubbard, and you're kind of offsetting some of that ownership while also getting a ton of correlation, right? So that those are the kind of spots I like to look for in terms of, game theorying out the week, right? In spots where maybe the public aren't getting to for whatever reason. Maybe lineup construction aren't getting people to Hubbard, maybe because they want to get Montgomery so badly. But that's kind of why I mentioned, when you asked me Hubbard or Montgomery, it was ownership. But also the other part of the answer probably should have been, and it depends on the rest of my lineup, because if I have a Dallas stack, Hubbard makes a ton of sense.
Right. Dalton Schultz, like, he had a huge game. The snaps and routes are still like a near split between him and Blake Jarwin. So like, if you want exposure to this game, Dalton Schultz and Jarwin are both cheap. So is Tommy Tremble. I mean, is he a trap at 2,500? We start to see them more involved on that Thursday night game. They were using him in motion. They give him a carry and he scored. Now Dan Arnold's been traded. McCaffrey's out. Dallas has been so bad against tight ends. Ertz and Goddard combined for over 100 in a touchdown, and it should have been more, honestly. And then Gronk had 2 touchdowns in week 1, and then Jared Cook had a touchdown called back in week 2. So they've been awful against tight ends. Is Tommy Tremble like a viable value play, or is it too cute? And then after that, we'll talk about the Carolina receivers.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Like, I think Tremble's actually super interesting in terms of, they went out of their way to get him touches last week.
That's what I'm saying.
So that was pretty appealing. Obviously, he's a rookie that they went out and drafted.
And then immediately the following week, they trade Dan Arnold. So, like, yeah. They're telling you exactly what what we're seeing. It's Tommy Tremble. He's not going to be a focal point of their offense, but he's now becoming a part of their offense.
Yeah, for sure. And like at that price, like even like when you're talking about Dalton Schultz, right? Like at this price down here, you're not really expecting anyone to go off for 6 and 100, right? Like you want them to
Tremble,
score
if Tremble gets you 3 for 40, cool.
Yeah. And obviously you like want them to score a touchdown.
Yeah, and then so if
like,
he scores, it's smash.
Yeah, it's just a bonus. Yeah, like that's kind of what I feel for like anybody that's under like 4K, honestly. Like even, you know,
I feel that way about anybody that's not Kelce, honestly. Even Waller and Kittle, like it's just Kelce is like, that's why I don't want to get off tangent, but like that's why Kelce was always a first round pick in fantasy, because a lot of people were saying, yeah, but I don't feel great about using my first round pick on a tight end. Like you're not. You're using your first round pick on a receiver who you get to put at the tight end spot.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the same thing applies to DFS too. Like he blocks out a ton of upside that, you know, if people are trying to find these value punt plays, like I've talked about it in the lineup review video that I've done for every Tuesday. I do it for each week. And I talked about going through tight ends. We've only seen 1 week where anybody scored 20 plus points at the tight end position on the main slate. And Kelce's only been on the main slate, I believe, once. And that was last week. And he didn't get there. So like, and that's not really often that Kelce's not going to get there in terms of 20 plus. Like 20 is where I have his median projection at. So when you're considering like everybody else on the slate, like doesn't even have the upside to even get to 20. And that's like Kelce's like median projection. It's just so tough to not even consider like these other guys, because Kelce's just going to beat them all so frequently. Like nobody else can really compete with them because of how good he is and because how good his role is. But like, if you compare, let's say, like Mark Andrews, right? Like, how often does he hit 20%? It's probably like a fraction of how often Kelce hits it. And like other guys like Austin Hooper, you know, it would take like a massive ceiling game out of him to get to even close to 20 points. Like, even if he finds the end zone, he's still probably not sniffing 20. Kelce, you know, he can pop off for 7 and 10 or 7 and 100 yards. And we won't even blink an eye, right? So like Kelce just has such an advantage against some of these tight ends. So like making him a priority to roster is so crucial in DFS because of that inherent upside. So that's kind of why I find it a bit trickier to get to plays like Tommy Tremble and Dalton Schultz, because you really are taking a shot on these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And if you miss, like if, let's say you don't play Kelce and you play Tremble or whatever, and then you pay up for, I don't know, Davante Adams, and he has 6 catches, 50 yards and doesn't score, like you're probably dead, especially if Kelce goes off, because you're setting yourself so far back at that tight end position. And sometimes it'll work if you are able to hit elsewhere where you're saving that money and where you're making that money up. But if you don't hit elsewhere, you're just so far behind if Kelce also has a big game.
Yeah. For the rest of the pass catchers from Carolina, DJ Moore is off to a great start. 6,600 on DraftKings. He's averaging 10.3 targets per game. And like I said, he's averaging 10.3 targets per game, despite not even Carolina's offense hasn't been pushed to throw this year. They have not trailed. I think there's a very good chance they trail in this game. Now, will he see Trayvon Diggs, who's kind of emerging as the next top-tier corner in the NFL? Yeah, he probably will. Diggs has shadowed Mike Evans and Keenan Allen this year. He didn't really shadow last week against the Eagles, but we could see him on DJ Moore a lot here. I still think doesn't matter. Like Diggs isn't there yet to where I'm like fading a player like DJ Moore. It's not like Jalen Ramsey. He's a talented player, but DJ Moore should get his, especially if they're trailing. And then, like, obviously, Robbie Anderson's been awful this year, but like, if I'm playing a second receiver, I'm just going to go down to 4K to Terrace Marshall.
Yeah, I will say, you know, that squeaky wheel narrative is definitely something to monitor with Robbie Anderson. Like,
yeah, I think Matt Rhule said they have to get him. Yeah, exactly.
He said it last week too. Before, obviously, again, did nothing on Thursday night, but this week he said it right after the game, and he said it should be more of a priority to get Robbie Anderson involved. And like, it's not like Anderson's, you know, his snaps are also not great either, right? But it's pretty comparable to DJ Moore still. So I think the targets are going to come.
Dude, watching the game. So DJ Moore is primarily on the left side of the formation. Sam Darnold snaps when they're on passing plays. He snaps the ball and looks to the left immediately. And the data backs it up. You look at our advanced receiving data at FTN Fantasy. There's what? Two players in the NFL with more first read targets than DJ Moore this year. Darren Waller and Cooper Kupp. DJ Moore has 29 first read targets, third most in the NFL. Like, I don't know how much that's drastically changing. I think it's just Darnold loves him.
Yeah. I mean, I also think like there's definitely a world where we see McCaffrey's targets be vacated, and that helps Robbie Anderson get an uptick. There's also a world where, okay, we lose Dan Arnold, who has 11 targets on the year. They just don't throw to a tight end. That's definitely possible. They didn't
throw
to
a tight end
at all last year. Yeah. So that's also possible. So like we're talking about Tremble, but it's also very possible they just say, okay, we don't have a tight end anymore. They can just block. So like there are ways like Moore and Anderson both get a ton of targets like we saw last year. So I do prefer Anderson over Marshall. Moore is obviously the guy that I would want. I still think, like you mentioned, his role is kind of comparable to Cooper Kupp right now. Obviously not, he doesn't have the same kind of elite production that Kupp's had because nobody has produced like Kupp has this year, but he's also $1,200 cheaper. He's probably going to be less popular. So I think Moore is a smash play this week.
And we didn't mention Zeke. I don't love the spot for Zeke, but he's still too cheap in my opinion at $6,500. So if you want to play Zeke, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just think I prefer the passing games in this contest. Any closing thoughts on Zeke?
No, I mean, right now I do have his projected ownership at 6%. So that is pretty low for a guy coming off of a 2-score game on a primary or on a primetime game. So if you stay that
correct
low,
me if
definitely
I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I don't think a lot of people are going to play Cooper and Zeke in the same lineup. And I think Cooper is going to be the guy from this game.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll affect Zeke's popularity as well. Again, I don't love him in this spot. I think he's fine, but I just think it's going to be more of Dallas's passing game getting it done here.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a spot to pivot, like if in lineups where you don't have Dallas pass catcher, same as Clyde, right? Mm-hmm. Flip it over to Zeke. But I also think Tony Pollard being there is definitely taking some of the ownership away. Because like if Zeke at this point, like if Zeke doesn't score twice, or he's probably not gonna have like a massive stealing like GPP winning game because of how much work Pollard has been getting, so maybe that's why his ownership is also falling.
Yeah, for sure. All right, the Giants travel to New Orleans to take on the Saints. A lot of injuries here, particularly with the Giants, who Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton both left last week's game with hamstring injuries. They're not practicing on Wednesday or Thursday, so I think I saw a report they're most likely going to be out for this game. So Kadarius Toney, $3,300. Maybe he gets work put. It might just be Colin Johnson, who actually got the benefit with those guys out last week. He caught 5 of 7 targets for 51 yards, $3,200. And then maybe Evan Engram gets a bump, who made his return or his debut last week. 6 targets, lost a fumble, but $3,000. Maybe it's just you play Barkley. Matchup's not great, but we saw him look better last week. Got more involved in the passing game with those guys out. 7 targets, that's a season high. And still just $6,700. What do we make of the Giants here with most likely no Shepard and no Darius Slayton?
Yeah, a lot of potential value. I mean, probably have to kind of follow the narrative trail. Again, I think it was either this morning or yesterday, Joe Judge came out and again said, we have to get Kadarius Toney the ball more. Last time we heard that was from Ian Rappaport, and he ended up getting 3 targets. But he was out on the field. He played 65% of the snaps last week. And only had 3 targets. So he could potentially be a guy that's interesting. Obviously, we know he has, at least from what we saw in college, he has some big playability that could translate to the NFL. It also might not, like we've seen with plenty of guys. But it's something that I'm willing to take a chance on here, especially if those 2 guys are out. Galladay was supposed to be limited. I mean, if you consider 70% of snaps limited, I guess that's limited. I think he could have been much more limited based on some of the reports that we saw. But they were also from Ian Rappaport, who I give a lot of shit to. But we also did see Shepard and Slayton get banged up in the middle of the game. So that also probably forced Galladay's hand into playing more. But yeah, if those 2 guys are both out, we probably do see a scenario where there's at least value options, right? You mentioned Johnson, Toney is available. Kenny Galladay, not really a value option, but definitely in play and definitely would get a bump. So yeah, plenty of guys there in that.
I mean, if Galladay gets shut down by Lattimore, which is possible, I mean, it could be a lot of Engram, and it scares me. But like at $3,000, what other tight ends in that price range have the upside of Evan Engram just as a player, right? Like, I know he's got drop issues, but like athletically, physically, like there's no tight ends close to him. Like, Anthony Firkser, David Njoku. Well, David Njoku is a ridiculous athlete, but he's playing with 3 other tight ends. So Cole Kmet, Max Williams, Trout. Like, I'm probably going to have some Evan Engram, and it's going to scare me, but like, I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball up the middle in this game against the Saints. And Barkley's going to get his targets, so like, I don't care about the matchup. I think Barkley's perfectly in play. The snaps have been great the last 2 weeks, and the targets went up. I still don't think I want to play Golladay, so it's like, I think Colin Johnson and Engram, if I'm looking at pass catchers from the Giants, might be the two ways I go, which pretty much tells you that you should maybe play the Saints defense then.
That's a good point. I mean, I will say in Engram, the same argument that I would have is like the same thing I said about Kelsey and Tommy Tremble, right? Like that's the issue with Engram. Mm-hmm. I still think it's fine. Like if you wanted to save the salary, he projects as a fine value right now. And I still have Shepard and Slayton projected in. That'll probably change once we get more official news. And obviously his projection will go up. But as for Tony versus Johnson, I actually probably prefer Tony. I know Johnson saw more targets last week, but 48% of snaps for Johnson compared to 65.7 for Tony. And I think Tony's probably the bigger play guy. I know Johnson's probably the better red zone threat because he's so dang big. But I don't know. I think I'd prefer Tony at that price.
For the Saints, is it Kamara and that's it?
Yeah, until further notice, that's pretty much it for the year.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know if you can do anything else.
Yeah, this game's pretty gross. I didn't even look what the Saints defense is priced at, but I do like them a lot here, obviously, against Daniel Jones, who turns the ball over enough, and now you're missing their best receiver this year, Sterling Shepard. So now if he's having to play with Golladay, who is more of a deep threat, and you're asking the offensive line to hold up, and the Saints defense has been awesome this year. I think the Saints defense could have like a legitimate, I think they had like 20 points almost last week, but I think they could have another really nice game. Still have a handful of games left. Let's go to Cleveland and Minnesota. Odell Beckham, this is a smash spot. Makes his debut last week, 9 targets, around a 25 to 28% target share, 77 yards. I thought he looked good. Like Odell Beckham in his entire career has been like an elite receiver. He's been an elite receiver anyway, but like, especially off slants, he's been so tough to guard on those routes. And that's what I saw immediately in this game. And he looked good. So now he's facing Patrick Peterson and Bashaud Breeland, who have been absolutely terrible in coverage this year. Minnesota has been getting destroyed by receivers. We saw Metcalf last week. So I really like Odell Beckham here.
Yeah, I love him. I know you like Odell a lot, and I know Joe Metz likes Odell a lot, but I think I'm probably the biggest Odell stan that I've ever seen. It is pretty crazy.
I almost wish he stayed with the Giants because the numbers he would have put up.
Yeah.
And obviously he's had injuries too.
Yeah.
But like in this offense, when Landry's not there, but like when you have Chubb and Hunt and everything, like the numbers Odell Beckham was putting up to start his career, like he was one of my favorite. I mean, he still is one of my favorite. I love Odell. I love him.
Yeah, he's definitely my favorite receiver. Like, probably my favorite receiver this like right now and
after Marvin Jones, right?
He'd be my second favorite all time, and behind a different former Lions wide receiver,
Calvin.
Yeah, but like Odell, he's first of all, bias aside, he's very explosive, and that's exactly what you need out of a guy in an offense that potentially is going to run the ball a lot, right? Like you can get away with rostering somebody like that because he has that explosive playmaking ability. Like rostering someone like Jarvis Landry can be hard at times because, you know, he's going to have to rack up points on catches and yards. He's not really often going to make massive plays. Taking him out helps because more targets are going to funnel to Beckham. I talked about this last week and I got some pushback on it from, I'm not going to mention the guy with the beard with no hair, wears a backwards hat a lot on this podcast at times, but he mentioned how mentioned how Cleveland really likes to spread the ball out. And I said, well, they're probably doing that based on necessity. Like we saw through the first 2 weeks, 3 tight ends have a 15% target share or more for this Cleveland team because their receivers were just dropping like flies. So they probably did that out of necessity. And I figured Odell Beckham would be more of a priority. And we saw that last week, 31% of the targets. And that's good. Now, 31% of targets translating to only 9 targets might not be that great. Like if you are a team with a more pass-heavy offense, you probably get more. But with no Landry in, and we saw it last week, Harrison Bryant, his targets went down to 6%, and Njoku didn't get targeted once. Like if we're going to allow these tight ends to kind of be pushed out of the offense, unlike in the first 2 weeks and more targets funneled to Odell, he's going to be the key guy here, and we know the matchup's phenomenal. Minnesota hasn't been able to stop anybody. We've seen Patrick Peterson get burned by every receiver on the planet this year, so totally, totally good matchup. I love the spot for Odell. He's probably one of my favorite plays of the week. The thing that makes it hard is in the same price range as Amari Cooper. So I think that's good because it'll keep his ownership down. But I think it's also tough because I do like Cooper a little bit more. But
playing both.
Yeah, we're playing both. Exactly.
I love Odell. Other than that, like, Nick Chubb has been good for fantasy, right? Like, but it's frustrating because he went back to no catches last game. His ceiling for catches in the game might be like 3. I mean, 7K on DraftKings, obviously more appealing on FanDuel. Minnesota just kind of gave it up to Chris Carson last week. I don't think he's a terrible play, but Kareem Hunt's getting plenty of snaps and touches. I don't know. I might just fade the backfield and play Odell Beckham. And then the other side of this game, Dalvin Cook was limited in practice on Wednesday. I think he's limited again on Thursday. If he plays, he's fine. You can play him, obviously. He's really good. I don't think Madison being as good as he was. Maybe Madison earned 3 touches more per game, but Dalvin Cook's still getting 20-plus touches every week. If he sits again, which I think is still possible, 6,600 for Madison. I mean, he had 32 touches last week, 8 targets. Like, you can go to him. And then the receivers, Jefferson 7,300, Thielen 6,800. Both aren't, like, priorities for me on the slate, but especially if Dalvin Cook's out, like, they're fine. They're not bad plays.
Yeah, I really like Jefferson. If Cook's out, if he's not out, like, I still like him. I think he's fine. I know the matchup's not great, but like, Jefferson's a guy that I'm willing to like roster in bad matchups. But like, Stephon Diggs is 300 more. You know, Jefferson's up there in that kind of price range, right? So I think I prefer guys like Diggs and stuff like that. But he does make more sense, like if you wanted to do like a mini stack with Odell, or you know, if Cook's out. So that's kind of where I would get my interest in those guys.
All right, the Colts travel to Miami to take on the Dolphins. Kyle, what the hell are we doing with Jonathan Taylor? Because I played him in tournaments last week. He wasn't very popular. Looked like it was going to go well. He was running well, ripping off, you know, good chunks of yardage. And then they stopped playing him and stopped giving him the ball. I'm going back to the well, especially if Marlon Mack, who, again, Marlon Mack being traded doesn't do anything. As long as he's a healthy scratch, so that's all I care about. Which he's been 2 of the 3 games. I don't know why he wouldn't be this game. Miami's been pretty bad against the run. They just gave up 100 and a touchdown to Peyton Barber last week. They're currently allowing 1.3 rushing touchdowns per game. They even allowed 3 Bills running backs to score 2 weeks ago. So I think this could be the breakout game we've been waiting to see from Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I liked Taylor a lot last week and obviously didn't really pan out, but like the same process behind the play, right? It's like the price keeps dropping. The interest in him is not rising with the lower price tag, so it could be a good spot to buy low. And like you mentioned, the game could be, you know, a good environment for him here. He's still dominating the majority. I probably shouldn't say dominating, but 56% of the team's carries on the year. I expect that to continue to go up, like we saw last year. The real interesting part is how much of the pass game work we're going to see. Like, people, you know, complain about Naheem Hines, right? But I mean, he still had 3 targets last week. Like, sure, it's not fantastic, but it's definitely not bad, right? That's going to be like his floor.
I mean, they have to use Naheem Hines right now, how they're using him, because outside of Michael Pittman, they have no risk. Like, Pascal is a nice end zone target. Paris Campbell's not going to pan out, I don't think. Obviously, T.Y. Hilton's not there. Like, they have to use Hines in the passing game. I don't like that he, you know, got the carries that he got last game. I mean, 6 isn't that much, but like, and like, Naheem Hines was like 1st and goal from the 9. They did like a toss play to him or whatever. He was just happened to be in the game and he went untouched 9 yards into the end zone. If he gets tackled at the 1 and then Taylor comes in and finally scores, maybe people aren't freaking out about Taylor. So I think Taylor's still their clear goal line back. The matchup's good. The price is down. And like, they're 0-3. They have a hobbling quarterback. How do you not? I know Quentin Nelson's day to day, their offensive line hasn't been what we thought it might be, but like, with the way their offense is constructed right now, how do you not just give the ball to Jonathan Taylor 20 times?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think it's definitely be something that they're gearing towards more, and it's definitely something to buy low on right now.
Do you have any interest in Hines on DraftKings? 4,900, just maybe, like, he could catch like 7 balls because of the way he's being used, but I probably don't think you have to go there. And then Michael Pittman has been the the guy, right? He's got 12 targets in each of his last two games. Tough matchup against Xavier Howard and company. I think that's another reason why I like Taylor, is because I think Pittman could struggle. So we could see a lot of Hines and Taylor in the passing game. And at the end of the day, Pittman's 5,400. Who do we talk about? You know, Odell Beckham's a couple hundred dollars more. I'd rather play Cole Beasley at 5,400. Robert Woods is 5,300. Who I'd rather play. So probably no Michael Pittman for me. It's probably just the running backs, and probably more so just Taylor from the Colts.
Yep. I'm the same way on the Colts right now.
Any interest in Miami? Miles Gaskin didn't even start last week. It was Malcolm Brown. Brown's taking 2-minute drill work and some goal line work. I have no interest in Miles Gaskin. Jalen Waddle and Mike Gesicki were both targeted a ton last game. Fuller maybe gets more run in his second week. Gesicki's interesting because I don't like his price at all. It scares me. But after week one, his usage has gone up in terms of snaps and routes and obviously targets. So that's nice to see. But I don't love paying 4K for him at tight end. Like, I still don't feel all the way confident about Gesicki. So, like, if I'm playing a tight end there, I'll just take the savings and play somebody I still also don't feel confident about, but still has upside. So, for me, it's honestly maybe just Jalen Waddle, who's kind of been the guy, and he's still cheaper than Parker, which is just wrong. He should not be cheaper than Devontae Parker after having 21 targets through the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think Waddle kind of proved last week that even if Fuller is there, he's still going to be heavily involved, 27% of the targets last week. And obviously Brissett liked to look at him. Now Will Fuller did miss practice yesterday. He got hurt on the last play of the game.
He was back today.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah.
So that, but again, like, even so, with him playing last week, we still saw Waddle be heavily involved. So Waddle would be pretty much the only guy in this game, in this Miami side, that I like. But I don't know if it's like a, you know, a massive interest. But he is a nice price tag, 4,900 on DraftKings.
Yeah, really comes down to price. And he should, like I said, he should be priced higher than Devontae Parker. All right, Washington at Atlanta. Two bad defenses. Yes, Washington's defense has been awful. It's been very weird. Like, Antonio Gibson still not playing third down snaps. In a game like last week, you're lucky he got that long touchdown because they were getting crushed all game. He would have gotten you nothing. If Washington's defense doesn't get it together, Gibson could be a massive bust this year because they're clearly still wanting to play McKissick. And if there's more negative game scripts than we might have thought entering the season, Gibson could be a bust. But having said that, Atlanta, I don't think Atlanta's offense is doing what Buffalo's did. This should be back and forth, I think. And Gibson at 6,100 against a bad Falcons defense, I mean, I'm going to have interest, and I'm just going to pray that the Falcons don't put up 40 somehow, and we see a lot of J.D. McKissick in the second half.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you mentioned, some of those question marks on Gibson are definitely valid. I think this is a good week to maybe say, well, hey, they're probably not going to fall behind 14-0 in, you know, 5 minutes like they did last week against this brutal Atlanta team. But, you know, big reason why that question mark is more of a concern is because the defense for Washington hasn't been that great. So I guess anything's possible. But yeah, I like Gibson this week. I will say he didn't practice today, and it's undisclosed as to why. And that was announced like 30 minutes ago, so as we were recording, but maybe that's something to monitor. But if he does play and he's a full go, I think he is super interesting, especially if guys like Swift and Montgomery and even like Hubbard take up more of the interest across the public.
I didn't know Gibson didn't practice. I'm glad you brought that up. It looks like a shin for Antonio Gibson. Did not practice. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Someone did. One of the reporters from Washington said that Gibson was wearing a sleeve over his shin during practice on Wednesday, and now he's not practicing. So not alarmed, but something we definitely need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, 100%.
I like Terry McLaurin a lot here, too. The Falcons corners don't have a shot against him. Taylor Heinicke has had tunnel vision for McLaurin since making his 2021 debut on Thursday night against the Giants. During that span, McLaurin has 21 targets. So I love McLaurin here. That's probably it. I don't want to pay $4,900 for Logan Thomas. Yes, he's been involved. He's still running a ton of routes. Do you have any interest in Heinicke? Because I was talking to our friend Debro in Slack, and he said he likes Heinicke this week. And I mentioned he's kind of expensive, But then you look at it, it's like, where else are you going under 6K quarterback? We talked about, and I think the two options might be from this game. And Heinicke, who's quietly, I didn't realize he scored that many fantasy points against Buffalo. I mean, 24 fantasy points because I forgot he had the rushing touchdown. And then obviously 24 against the Giants. So 24 fantasy points in back-to-back games for Heinicke, and now he gets the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, so he was a guy that was grading out really well in the model. Early in the week, he's, he has the sixth best player rating in the model amongst quarterbacks right now, which is very, very high. It's mainly because price. He is pretty cheap, and obviously the matchup is good. I will say, when you talk about how we talk about tight end, right, with Kelsey having so much upside, in the bottom tier not really having that, I do sort of feel that way with the quarterbacks. Like, for example, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, those guys, they go put up 40-plus. You're really not that surprised, right? It's probably never going to happen with Heinicke or anybody in this range. So that's the issue that I have. However, he is cheap and the matchup is good. And you have good, you know, stacking pairings, right? You can pair him with McLaurin and you can bring him back with some good options as well. So it does make sense. He's probably not a guy that I have in, you know, three or four main lineups. But if I'm MMEing or, you know, maybe building 10-plus lineups, I don't mind having him. You know, I prefer him over pretty much any other player under 6K, other than maybe Matt Ryan, who I guess we'll talk about in a second here.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Matt Ryan because, look, I wrote him up in that value article, and I literally started it with this line. There isn't a ton of great value at quarterback this week, and I'll be honest, this play terrifies me. it's just the Falcons' offense has been, it's been terrible. Matt Ryan, 4.2 intended air yards per attempt this year. Only Andy Dalton's been worse. 2.6% of his pass attempts have traveled 20 yards or more down the field. Only Andy Dalton's been worse. But Washington through 3 weeks, most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks, 7.5 yards per pass attempt, 2 passing touchdowns per game, 5,400 for Matt Ryan, and you can play him with Ridley, who, yeah, he'll probably be shadowed by William Jackson, but, like, I don't care. Ridley's still getting, like, a massive target share. He's 7K. I think Ridley could be really sneaky in tournaments this week. I don't know if I'm going to play Matt Ryan, but I get it. And, like, the issues I'm having is, A, the Falcons have no downfield passing attack, so is there a ton of upside? But what if that finally happens? And then could it happen in this spot because Washington's been terrible? But also, I still believe on paper Washington's defense is better than this. They have too much talent. Their back end is bad. Outside of William Jackson, the back end of their defense is bad. But their pass rush is so good that we thought it would just kind of mask that. The problem is their pass rush isn't getting home this year. Like, Chase Young has been getting, like, double teamed a lot and stuff. And I don't know. I do like Ridley in tournaments. So I guess if you're playing Ridley, maybe you stack him with Ryan and bring it back with Terry McLaurin. I don't hate that stack. But clearly I'm on the fence about it still.
Yeah. I mean, so this is like this is basically the regression bowl, right? This is how I feel about it. We saw, you know, Washington be a top three defense last year. Right now, they're a bottom three defense, according to DVOA. Atlanta, they were never a good offense, but they were good for fantasy last year. That they put up plenty of points for fantasy. It was totally fine.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley led the NFL in air yards last year. Now he's getting, like, no air yards.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we felt going into this year. So, like, sure, we could see Atlanta kind of get back to last year, maybe have more structured offense that actually has some upside. But we could also see Washington return to, like, elite form any given week. And this could be a perfect week for them to do that against a terrible offensive line and just a bad offense in general. So it's kind of the regression bowl, in my opinion. I think that's kind of what this is here. If I had to side with it, I would side with the fact that, like you mentioned, Washington's secondary has been pretty bad, even when, you know, their pass rush should be better, right? Like, we can all agree it should be better, and it was last year. That was kind of what led their team last year. But even if the secondary is still bad, I think Atlanta can still, you know, get it done here. So I think there's still upside for Atlanta. I mean, I actually think Atlanta is more of a shock. I don't know, actually, because Washington was so good last year. But I think how bad Atlanta has been very shocking to me. Because it's, you know,
I just think it's funny that people forget how good Julio still is, and all of a sudden their offense is struggling, and it's like, man, maybe they could use, like, no kidding, anybody could use Julio.
But
I just think it's been shocking how, like, they just don't have any doubt. Like, you still have Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts, but, like, you're just not, they can't get anything going down the field. Like, that's what's been most surprising to me. And they're kind of still running the ball in, you know, negative game scripts. Like, it's very weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, even when we saw Julio out last year, we still saw like Calvin Ridley have big games, and we still saw Atlanta produce, and they just haven't been able to do anything. I will say the three matchups that they've had so far were never like really great, so maybe that's why, and maybe this one won't be either. So it's kind of a spot where, which team do you think is going to like regress the most? And I don't really know. I think it's tough. I think I would side with Atlanta's offense because I think that they still have upside, even if they do struggle. Like Ridley, like you mentioned with Ridley, he's going to be a dominant force in terms of dominating that target share. He's at 25% this year, and that's low. I think he's going to be much higher as the year goes on. So it's potentially a good spot to buy low here.
And I did see from a beat reporter that it sounds like Gibson's DNP today might be precautionary. So not sounding the alarms yet. It looks like he could still easily play. All right, let's go to Seattle and San Francisco. Really no injury news here other than the backfield for San Francisco. Elijah Mitchell, limited in practice with the shoulder. We'll see if he returns. Trey Sermon was, I guess, a starting running back last week, even though it was kind of Kyle Juszczyk. And if Sermon didn't score from a yard out, he would have been absolutely dreadful. I'm not playing anybody from this backfield. Just don't think you have to. The question is, what do we make of the pass catchers? Because Brandon Ayuk finally became a full-time player again in week three. Dominated snaps, caught 4 of 6 targets for a touchdown. 5K. We know Seattle can struggle against receivers, especially slot receivers. And then Kittle obviously has upside. Just please let him run routes, please. I know he's great at blocking. The San Francisco side's kind of easy for me, though. It's like Kittle, I like Debo. I don't like Debo at 6,500 with Ayuk being a full-time player, although Debo did still have 10 targets last game. What do you make of San Francisco?
Yeah, I think Debo's still pretty interesting because now with Ayuk kind of returning, the ownership might be down on him. Like I have him at 10% right now for a guy who, you know, we've talked about players like DJ Moore and Cooper Kupp who are just dominating like their team's targets. And that might change a little bit, but like you mentioned, still had 10 targets last week. 33% target share on the year. So like if that kind of production is going to continue and that kind of usage is going to maintain there, I still think he's interesting. And I think you're probably getting a bit of, you know, an ownership discount because of that Brandon Ayuk stuff. But the one thing I think could be interesting, and you know, it's definitely like more of a speculation than anything, is potentially Trey Sermon getting more work here. We saw Kyle Juszczyk play 68% of the snaps last week, and he was heavily involved. I shouldn't say heavily involved. He was more heavy involved than we probably would have expected, right, from a fullback. And I wonder if any of that was due to like the quick turnaround in terms of Trey Sermon was dealing with concussion stuff. Maybe he didn't really get a full week of truly getting a ton of work, right? Elijah Mitchell was doubtful all week. So maybe that was something that was kind of like wavering, right? It's still Shanahan, so I'm not that surprised that he like wanted to do some weird stuff. But maybe with a full week of practice again, maybe Sermon gets more involved. That's like the speculation play for me out of this team, but not anything I'm super confident in.
Seattle, it was a Metcalf week last week. Lockett had that scary looking injury and then he finished the game, so he's fine. Pete Carroll said as much today, so Lockett should be good to go. Seattle is like everybody's kind of priced right. The matchup is better for the passing game. I don't hate Wilson double stacks. I think they'll be not as popular as they've been the first couple weeks, especially with, you know, the Bills there and the Chiefs and the Rams and Dallas. So I think Wilson, Lockett, Metcalf stacks and tournaments. I think the back end for San Francisco is still the weak point of their defense.
Yep, I agree. I will say, you know, it gets to a point where do you want to pay up for both of these guys? Like we talked about this concept on the Friday show with Alex and myself. He actually brought it up originally, but it's to a point where if Russell Wilson throws for 3+ touchdowns, both of these guys are averaging 85+ yards and a score over a touchdown per game in games where Wilson throws for 3 touchdowns. So it goes to show like some people don't like to double stack these guys. And it didn't work last week, but it also just didn't work for Russell Wilson. So in the games where, you know, Wilson has that ceiling performance, both these guys can get there. So I think it's fine, but now that they are both expensive and it is very tough to decide between one of the two. If I'm deciding between the two, it's Metcalf for me. I just think he's the more dominant force. And I think maybe if Lockett is playing banged up a little bit, I know they said he's fine. He did return, but still, I mean, it did look like a pretty scary injury at first. So if he's going to be limited at all, or maybe even like not 100%, I think I'll lean Metcalf.
Yeah, and I feel like if you're playing a ton of lineups, and you plan on playing Russell Wilson, even if you're not, like, play a lineup with Metcalf, play a lineup with Lockett. Like, I feel like you should almost do that every week if you're playing 150, 200 lineups. Because the odds of one of those guys going for 100 touchdown every week is clearly pretty high. It's happened every week. It's been one of them every week. So I don't hate that idea at all. Let's go to other teams in the NFC West. Arizona at the Rams. I mean, Cooper Kupp is absurd right now. The matchup against the Cardinals is fantastic. He's got a 35% target share. He has a ton of end zone targets. He's been just a cheat code. And you could honestly make the case he might even be a little underpriced. Like, he's probably priced behind Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill, and that's it. So he's probably priced accordingly. But I don't think we have to say much about him. Robert Woods, though, the more the week goes on, I don't think he's going to be, and you can answer this better than I can. I don't think he's going to be anywhere close to being like chalk. But even with his early season struggles, I think he could be kind of popular, because I think everybody in the fantasy space right now is saying, buy low on Robert Woods, buy low on Robert Woods. And now that can translate to DFS and a great game environment against a bad secondary. And like, yeah, Cooper Kupp's been clearly the guy, and he's clearly Stafford's guy. But he's not going to have a 35% target share the whole year. And Robert Woods is still a good player, and they're going to want to get him involved. So at 5,300 against the Cardinals, yeah, I'm going to play some Robert Woods.
Yeah, I have him as the fifth most popular receiver this week right now. Okay.
I think price has a lot to do with that, too. If he was like 6K still, different story.
Yeah, 100%. And I also think it comes down to a fact where people are going to stack these guys up together, too, mm-hmm. with Stafford. So that also will inflate their ownership together, where you don't have like one eating away ownership from the other one. But I think he's definitely, you can go back to him here. Obviously, it's been very, very alarming how frequently they're looking at Cooper Kupp. And you mentioned the first read stuff, but 36% or 35.5% of the targets compared to 20.5% where Woods is at. It gets very significant. The ownership is going to be high on Cooper Kupp again, and the price is $1,000 more than it was last week. It's a tricky situation. If you are trying to, you know, play someone contrarian here, because now Cooper Kupp has found himself in this range with Stephon Diggs and Justin Jefferson and Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill. So like, now we have all these elite pivots up here, right? And it's not like we can't find guys with like 30 plus target shares. Like Devontae Adams is right there with 37 on the year, about same ownership projection, but still DK Metcalf 31% on the year, Diggs 27%. Like, there are plenty of guys here with this kind of target share. So Cooper Kupp is going to be a perplexing thing for me this week in terms of if I'm going to play him at this kind of ownership or not. I know that he's a strong play. I know that he's, you know, in terms of if you don't have to worry about salary, you don't have to worry about being contrarian. Yeah, of course he's a great play. But when you're trying to play game theory like I like to do a lot, Cooper Kupp might be a guy that I try to get off of this week.
If you're going in that like higher mid-range area at tight end, I still like Tyler Higbee. He had the dud in week two, bounced back last week. He's still playing like 100% of the snaps. He's running routes on like 90% of Stafford's dropbacks. So I still like him quite a bit. I would love one of the running backs here if it was just one of them, but Daryl Henderson, limited in practice. McVay does expect him to play. I do think there's a slight chance that he sits still because the Rams turn around and play on Thursday night. If he sits, I love Sony Michel here. We saw him as the clear every down back last week. And yeah, surprisingly, that's sarcasm, he didn't produce much against Tampa Bay's front, but three receptions, four targets. He actually lined up out wide a couple times, 20 carries. The Rams clearly are telling us they want to use one running back. So if Henderson, if they kind of just give him one more week to rest before the Thursday night game and Michelle's the guy, I'm going to have a lot of interest in Michelle. And then we'll have to see if they say anything. If Henderson does play, there's a chance it could be like, whereas Henderson, it was like 95% of the snaps and running back touches the first 2 weeks. It could be like 70-30 Henderson Michelle now that Michelle's kind of acclimated with the offense and Henderson's still dealing with the rib. But if it's just one running back, I mean, this is an elite offense. You want to have exposure in a lot of these games to the running back for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think it's going to be a mess if they both play.
That's what I'm afraid of. I kind of hope Henderson just sits because they play on Thursday night, and I can just play Michelle.
Yeah, it'd also be pretty interesting to see where the Michelle ownership falls if Henderson is out. I haven't both projected to get 50-50 of the snaps because I just don't know what's going to happen yet. So tough to really get a good feel for it now. But if they're going to be lower owned, they could be very interesting in terms of a pivot off of that Cup and Woods popularity. And Higbee also serves that same kind of purpose.
So that 50-50 split you have projected right now, is that like a placeholder because you don't know if Henderson's going to play, or is that assuming Henderson does play?
Yeah, it's a placeholder right now. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up turning out to be that way.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
And like in season long and stuff too, like there's leagues where I have Henderson and Michelle, and I just kind of hope Henderson sits one more week and Michelle gets all the work again. I think it's possible still because like McVay keeps saying I expect him to play, but then he keeps adding I'm not 100% sure. And the fact that they play Thursday night, like that scares me because they could just kind of limit him a little bit. So we'll see. For the Cardinals, DeAndre Hopkins back at practice with the ribs. He worries me here. I mean, he's not getting that target share we saw last year. It was around 30%. This year it's at like 18%. AJ Green's been a legitimate part of the offense. Christian Kirk's getting the downfield targets. They're still mixing in Rondale Moore. I'll tell you what, it's crazy because I didn't have a lot of interest in this player in the offseason, but my favorite player from this Cardinals offense is Chase Edmonds. 5,500 on DraftKings. He is getting a ton of passing down work. Right now he is currently six among all running backs in routes, tied for the third most among running backs in targets. He's in the slot around 12% of the time, out wide around 11% of the time. And look, if the Rams with their secondary and their corners can slow down Hopkins and company, they play a lot of zone. Edmonds could have another 7-8 catches here, and the Rams just allowed 51 yards and a score on 9 targets and 9 catches to Gio Bernard last week. Sure, a lot of that came in garbage time trailing, but the Cardinals could be trailing in this game. I like Chase Edmonds quite a bit here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough offense because of, you know, how many receivers we have just jumbled around here now, right? Like, after week two, I thought we might see some more clarity with Rondale Moore. Like, I thought he would separate himself, and then, you know, he comes back in week three and has a season low in terms of usage across the board with area.
Super tilting.
Yeah, very, very frustrating. So it's now strikes me as a spot that could just be an aggravating place to kind of predict things. I will say the way I feel about Hopkins was he still saw 6 targets last week, and I think he might have been a bit limited. Now he could be limited again this week, so it's kind of tough there as well. But yeah, I agree on Edmonds. I think this could be a good spot for him in terms of it could be finally a game where Arizona doesn't just boat race somebody, and they might have to have it more of a neutral game script, so Edmonds could be a bit more involved in the passing game. So yeah, I agree on the Edmonds call.
What do we make of Kyler? His offensive line's pretty banged up right now. I think two or three of their offensive linemen weren't practicing. Touchdown variance finally went the opposite way of Kyler last week. Connor got 2 short yardage touchdowns, and then they had a whole possession taken away off a pick 6. So that was kind of annoying. He still got 300 passing yards, and he scored another rushing touchdown. He has 3 in 3 games. Matchup's not great, but I mean, how many quarterbacks have the ceiling of Kyler Murray on this slate?
Yeah, totally fine with Kyler if you have the salary for him. I would much rather get to Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes here. And like, for example, just based on projection, I have Hurts and Kyler Murray like a point off of each other. So I think Hurts has a massive game this week here. So for that reason, like, I'm probably off of Murray just because I would rather get to Allen at, you know, $200 more, rather get to Mahomes at $300 more. You know, the matchup's not great for Kyler either, and it's just tough to stack with him.
It's like you said, it's like, obviously Hopkins is, you would think, the guy, but like, it's not as clear, right? Like, Kirk's getting the deep targets, and they don't use Ramsey to shadow.
Yeah.
But there's going to be times where Hopkins is against Ramsey. And he's not 100%. Like, it's a good point. It's not exactly the most clear stack, and you don't have to stack with Kyler, but like, and if he's going to have, I think in this spot, because his rushing yards haven't been that high this year. So like, in this spot,
35 yet.
Right. So in this spot, like, if he's going to go off against the Rams, he's going to have to probably have some passing touchdowns.
Yeah, and in spot, like when you're talking about building lineups for a tournament, like the games where Kyler has the massive, especially at this price tag, where he has the massive, you know, 40 point performance.
It's like the week one. It's like the week one stat line. He's gonna have a mixture of everything.
Yeah, like sure, he could, you know, score twice on the ground and maybe get 60, 70 yards on the ground. I don't know if he's going to, you know, do what Lamar does every other week, it seems, where he's going to rush for 100 yards and score twice on the ground. Like Kyler has that upside, but he's not going to do it nearly as often as Lamar is. So with that, with this price, the ceiling is kind of attached to those receivers, right? So when you're talking about guys appear like Mahomes and Allen, where they're so expensive and they have correlated ceilings with their pass catchers, like Allen has with Diggs and Mahomes has with Reek and with Kelsey. Sure, you had that same with Hopkins, but do you feel confident about filling in a second receiver? And do you even feel that confident about Hopkins right now? Like, it's hard for me to say I feel as confident about Hopkins as I do with Diggs or Kelsey or Hill. So that's kind of the issue that I have with Murray.
Very fair. Should be a fun game, though. We'll see what happens. Two games left. Pittsburgh at Green Bay. Deontay Johnson didn't play last week with the knee injury. He's limited in practice. Sounds like Mike Tomlin expects him to be back. Juju Smith-Schuster with the ribs didn't practice Wednesday. He's day-to-day. So obviously, no Deontay last week. Juju leaves in like the second or third quarter. Najee Harris ends up with a ridiculous 14 catches. I think that was the seventh most among all running backs in NFL history. 19 targets, the second most among all running backs in NFL history. Just a massive performance. 6,800 seems pretty fair. It's not the most exciting. Like, I think I saw a stat that he's been hit at or behind line of scrimmage on 70% of his carries, so the offensive line is still a massive concern. But if he's getting 25 touches and 8 to 10 of them at least could be through the air, I mean, he's got to be in play. Anybody else from Pittsburgh? I mean, Roethlisberger's unplayable. He looks awful. Claypool may be interesting if Juju's out, but if he's in, I don't really want to play Claypool. Deontay maybe sees Jair Alexander in this game to an extent. I don't know. Like, Pittsburgh is there. I can't believe Buffalo lost them in week one. I'm still so mad about that.
Yeah, I am very down on the Pittsburgh offense right now. However, if you take out Juju, as we saw last week, Najee Harris could get a ton of targets. Juju's like their underneath guy, and with him out, Najee Harris stepped right into that role. And then Claypool also got a bump as well. I think Claypool maybe got more of a bump with Deontay out in terms of the kind of targets that they're going to receive. But if one or both of those guys are out, which does sound like Deontay is going to play, but it sounds like Juju could very well miss, I think both Najee and Claypool would get at least small bumps with Juju out. Now, even with how bad the offense has been, if Najee Harris is going to get double-digit targets every week, which obviously very hard to project, but also, is it super unrealistic to expect, you know, 7-8 targets? I don't think it's that unrealistic considering he's playing 97% of the snaps. His offensive floor line is terrible.
Yeah, his floor, if everybody's like, if every receiver for Pittsburgh plays, his floor is still 5 targets.
Yeah, I agree. So especially, you know, we saw that in week 2 and week 3 kind of turn towards more involving him in the passing game. So I think he's, you know, he's very safe. And, you know, even in spots where you maybe don't expect the offense to flourish a ton, you can still get to this running back because he has so many high value touches with all these targets. So him and Claypool are the guys that I like the most here. Claypool's probably only if one of Deontay or Juju are out. But yeah, Najee is definitely in play either way.
For the Packers, Aaron Jones, don't believe he or was limited on Wednesday with an ankle. I think he's practicing today, so he appears to be fine. Rodgers and Devontae, you know what you're getting from those two. MVS, I think, is going to be out this week. Maybe that opens things up for Alan Lazard or Cobb, but I think there's better value. Green Bay's kind of boring, but is it just like the three A's? Aaron, and Adams?
Yeah, pretty much. But I do think they're interesting. I think Aaron Jones is super interesting this week. His price has gone up considering last time we saw him on the main slate, which was week one, I believe. Because we saw him.
Yeah, Saints week.
Yeah, and he was horrible that week, but the entire offense was, and he was 6,700 that week. So he obviously went up $1,000, but the ownership is still low. I have him at under 4% right now. And, like, in my opinion, this Aaron Jones role looks really good. I really like how they're using him right now. They're using him more in the red zone as a pass catcher, which I really like. Obviously, we saw it's going to look that way when you catch, you know, three touchdowns in week two like he did. But I really like his role right now. In my opinion, I was a little bit worried or at least interested to see how his role would change with A.J. Dillon being that backup running back compared to Jamal Williams. And in my opinion, it's been good still. You know, the targets have been nothing elite or anything, but I think they'll continue to trend up. We haven't really seen him in a spot where he's been able to really benefit through the air except for in week two. But even then in week two, after he scored three times through the air, they were in a blowout. Like, they just blew the lines out. And last week it was, you know, more of a neutral game script. So I don't think this will turn into a spot where they're behind. They need to play catch up a ton, but I really like the role. He's getting a ton of targets or a ton of touches, I should say. And the red zone work has been pretty solid as well. 13 red zone carries on the year, 18 red zone opportunities on the year. So I think Aaron Jones is going to be a sneaky high upside contrarian play this week.
And Davante Adams is the GOAT, so play him if you like scoring points. We'll close it out with Baltimore at Denver. Lamar Jackson hasn't practiced Wednesday or Thursday with a back issue. Now, it doesn't sound incredibly serious, but and they're saying it's like soreness for him. He has taken a lot of hits this year because the running backs aren't getting carries like they were the last couple years. So I don't want to say there's a 0% chance Lamar Jackson doesn't, I don't want to say there's a 0% chance he sits this game out, but it's something we need to keep track of. Rashad Bateman's eligible to return. I think he might. You're not playing him anyway. If he plays, he'll be limited at some capacity. I only have interest in, honestly, given the slate, I don't even know if I have interest in the Ravens at all. Just because Lamar is obviously always in play, but like you said, I prefer Josh Allen. I prefer some other quarterbacks that are cheaper. So, like, I might not even like this game at all.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel about it. I don't really have a ton of interest. Like, I guess Cortland Sutton's okay. He's pretty cheap on FanDuel, so I guess he's fine. But as for the Baltimore side,
you can't play the backfield.
Yeah, it's impossible. I think, you know, Bateman probably will be limited, but even if he's there taking away from Hollywood Brown and Watkins in any capacity, especially after what Brown did last week, worst, like literally the worst game I've ever seen out of an individual player with all those terrible drops. I would
Lamar
be surprised.
Should have been like, how many points did Lamar still score in that game? He scored 20.2 fantasy points. And I think two of the touchdown drops were on the same drive from Hollywood. So he couldn't have scored three touchdowns. He could have scored two. But like, yeah, Lamar should have. And they were all long touchdowns, too. They're like 40 plus yard touchdown passes that should have been caught. So Lamar should have had the most ridiculous fantasy game, and he just didn't. Yeah.
I mean, at one point, I literally thought to myself, he's dropping these on purpose. Like, that was the only explanation. Like, the one, it would have been like a 60-yard touchdown. Nobody was near him, and he dropped it. The one by the sideline, I was like, how is that even possible?
It was wild.
Oh, it was crazy. And he was like, he was having a really good game. He had like 53 yards in the second quarter.
Yeah, he did.
On three catches, and then that's all he did the rest of the game because he dropped a ton of passes, and they said, we're not throwing to you anymore. It was definitely wild. Now, again, I don't really think that'll – it's different for every team and every player how, like, drops will impact the player's role. Because, like, if you think about it, like, sure, it's never fun to see, like, a receiver drop a pass when you roster him and, like, he's about to score a touchdown or whatever. But, like, if a team doesn't really care, then it's probably not going to affect his role at all. However, a team could really care and be like, oh, Rashad Bateman's here. Let's play him 50% of the snaps. Sit Marquise Brown down, you know, for now play him 60% snaps. You know, it could definitely impact it, but it also could be nothing. So that's something to monitor. And if it does impact nothing and Marquise Brown's still getting 30% of the targets and, you know, 90% of the snaps, I do think he's an interesting play.
Yeah, overall, I'm not too thrilled with this game, though. Like, Denver's backfield's still pretty much a split. Gordon's getting more of the passing down work. Javonte, a lot of the short yardage work, but don't feel great about either player. So, like, Sutton would be the one, just because, like, yeah, he had a down game last week, but they didn't have to do much. Tim Patrick's price has come up to 4,900 to where, like, again, not a bad play. He's been very productive, at least 90 yards or a touchdown in every game, but just not the game environment. I think there's better plays. So this game is kind of almost a full fade for me. If you want to play Andrews coming off his best game, sure. But overall, it's not. It's this is definitely the least exciting game of the slate for me. That'll do it for the slate. Really interesting slate. We're still waiting on some injury news. Obviously, we have the whole. It's always interesting slate, and this was the case last week because the Panthers played on Thursday night. But it's always interesting slate when McCaffrey's not on the slate, and like yes, his team is on the slate, but now we're instead of paying or deciding to pay $9K for McCaffrey. Now we're deciding if we're paying, what, $6K for the backup who, I mean, it's interesting because it's we didn't talk about it, but it's entirely possible that he doesn't get the Mike Davis role that Davis saw when McCaffrey first got hurt last year because Davis is a veteran, Chuba is still a rookie, and they have a veteran behind him in Royce Freeman. So, like, it's very interesting to see what happens with the Panthers and Dallas in that game, and overall it should be a fun slate.
Yep, 100%.
So before we get out of here, I want to talk about some redraft stuff. If you are playing in your leagues and redraft and you're looking for some more competitiveness, some more smack talk, go to topropsports.com, sign up with your email, use the code FTN, import your league, whether you play on ESPN, Yahoo, whatever, import your league, invite your league mates, and you can play weekly cash contests. So look, you don't want to wait till the end of the season to potentially collect some cash prizes. You can say to your friend, hey, I'm playing you this week. I think I'm going to beat you. I think my team's better than yours. Let's make this a little more interesting. You can play weekly cash contest over at topropsports.com. Again, use the code FTN. Appreciate Kyle Murray for stopping by the pod. Make sure you're checking out all of his great content, articles, projections, everything for DFS, for every sport. Like you said, he's doing baseball when baseball until baseball finishes. He's doing basketball once basketball starts. He's obviously still doing football. He's doing golf. He's doing everything over at FTNDaily.com. Make sure you check that out as well as all the great content. Best of luck in week number 4. Hopefully it's a good one. We'll be back Friday for some start sit talk for redraft. Adam Pfeiffer, Kyle Murray. This has been Fade the Chalk. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.